Good evening, everybody. It's so wonderful to have you with us.
Yay!
Everybody, I'm Mara Weber, the music director of this wonderful, wonderful Livermore Amateur Symphony Orchestra. With me right here is Chase Sproul, our soloist. And because one part of my body is 400 years old, we're going to sit down. It's wonderful to see so many of you already here for our program this evening, and I just have to say, what a joy. Thank you, Brandon, a member of our orchestra in the viola section, who introduced me to Chase and thus began our opportunity to make this beautiful music together. It's been a total joy to every inch of every note and all the fun in between. You are many things in a musical connection to the world. You're a soloist, you're a chamber musician, you're a teacher, you are also a concertmaster, right? And you have a very you have an affinity and a special relationship with certain composers in the world. Tell us more about how you have found these connections and what drew you into using your violin to connect to the world in this way.
That's a heavy and fantastic question. I'm sorry. So first, when I was born, it does go back to my childhood. When I was 12 years old, I was pretty seriously injured during a basketball game at school. I got pushed down, and, hope you're not finished, but like my left kneecap was severed in half, all the tendons were torn away, everything. I was in and out of major surgeries for 2 years, bedridden, wheelchair bound, everything you could possibly think of. And I was 1 year into my violin studies at the time. So during that moment in life, my parents' house had two stories on it. My room was up on the second floor. There was a lot of me being in my room and sort of fighting off pain and trying to find ways to entertain myself. And the one thing that I had for sure was my violin, because like seeing friends and stuff was totally out of the question. So I was doing a lot of practicing, and that was where my love of movies was really starting. So that happened to be the time where I didn't previously have cable in my room, and I got cable during that time, and I started watching all the scary R-rated movies with the volume way down, so my parents didn't know. And I started following them up at the movie scores, and I didn't know the composer's names by that point, but one movie in particular called Candyman was like my obsession. Well, it still is my obsession.
The score for that, I'm trying to remember the composer, the score. It was Bill
Glass. Yeah. And that's sort of how that relationship started, without him knowing it was going to be a relationship. I was just going to be studying Philip Glass's music forever. Until 2012, when I moved out to Rhode Island, and I had the opportunity to start working with Philip Glass, and Philip Glass Ensemble, and sort of what I've been doing since. So it was born out of like childhood, and wanting to be involved with television and film. So it's been kind of a weird but odd relationship.
Yeah. I, like you, my relationship with symphonic music, it wasn't really necessarily connected to films I saw, but I had films running in my head. Like my own grand story with Sibelius II or whatever. And like you, I didn't know that was Sibelius. I didn't know anything of Finland or any of that. And I also only in college learned that the Moldau was not the fifth movement of the Sibelius Second Symphony. So one of these lessons, I think, is you don't have to have, there's no prerequisite to this music. It's what does it draw out in your imagination, and you're bringing us this piece, the Butterfly Lovers Concerto, which is unlike any violin concerto I've ever experienced. And my lack of exposure to it stands in sharp contrast to how beloved and working it is in the world, especially globally, not just in the United States. The melodies in this piece are as hummable and memorable and known to many humans as the themes from the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto or the Rook or some other. And it is cinematic. It isn't necessarily, it wasn't composed for a film, but the story itself is dramatic and specific and compelling, and you can really hear the story in the music. What are some elements that you find that are unique to this piece that accomplish that?
Well, the writing between the solo violin voice and the orchestra, the force, is really unique. Because one might think that this is the kind of piece where, because there's a violin solo line, the violin has to do all the special work and the orchestra is just accompanying it. That's not true. The entire work is based off of this sort of vocal, dramatic, heavy slide, special effects, trying to give a sense of the ancient popular instruments like erhu, to get like certain colors, certain aspects, certain styles. So what you'll hear a lot is a dialogue, an ongoing dramatic dialogue between the violin and the orchestra and yourself as you're driving the orchestra. And I think that that's something that's really special. Technically, I think one of the things that's special is that the language throughout the piece feels very fluid, so there's a lot of rushing forward and then closing back, which I think is aiding the sense of story, which I see in your program once. This overarching tragic love story. So you'll see a lot of, instead of me being in one position or with my fingers stuck in a place on the violin, you'll see a lot of sliding back and forth and trying to bend certain notes, and a lot of Laura and I staring at each other in like drama and love and all these things with respect to our husband, doing all these things. I'm like, dare we? Are we going to take this moment? Yes, we're going to take this moment. So you'll see a lot of back and forth and give and take and feel like you're going on a wild dramatic ride.
You can hear it. The music is full of variety. It starts very beautifully and quietly on the flute. And then with a sweeping melody in the strings, which is the love theme of the story. And you can hear, sort of, into my ear, you hear, okay, these two people are meeting, and there is a representation that of those two characters in the solo violin and solo cello in the dialogue. And then there's sort of the adventure part of the story. It feels like traveling music. We're off on some sort of journey of life, and you can hear a sort of a playfulness in it, and then a very, very passionate, aggressive point in the story where all the conflict is happening. And there is a moment of transformation in the harp, where just before those love themes return, where the lovers have been transformed after their tragic end. And the sliding you describe is something we've really worked on. It is very vocal. That's a really good metaphor. And it sounds to me like the intonations of various Chinese language and dialects itself. The language itself is what makes the melodic writing. A lot of melody comes from language. Song comes from speech. In all languages, and so it's just very specific. A longer amount of distance is traveled. There's a lot of sliding in string playing, but this is very different. It's before and after, up and down, and the bending of notes and things. So how have you found? Everybody's still worried about our art form. I mean, we're worried that people aren't learning about classical music anymore, and so they aren't drawn to it. Are you finding this to be problematic in the way you engage the world? Are you worried about this, or do you see an opportunity for a different way of engaging. Like, where do you see concerts and orchestras and classical music, or like I just like to call it symphonic music, going?
That's a great question. That's like the question in this moment. I think once upon a time, maybe 5 years ago, I was more worried than I am now. Even this opportunity to work with your orchestra, with this orchestra, I think is a symbol of where we are in this moment, where we're really thinking about what we call the DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and its effect on programming, its effect on orchestras throughout the country, throughout the world. We're seeing that we're trying to get more comfortable exposing ourselves to different kinds of repertoire, different kinds of languages, to play and to express and to connect with people. And one of the things that I think this orchestra is modeling in that journey is it's scary to break out of something that's successful, that you think works or that you know works. So when you do something that's not always Beethoven or not always Dvorak, with respect to those composers who I love, it can feel like a risk. But there's more than just ticket sales happening there. There's the experience of the players that are on the stage themselves who are taking a huge risk to do something that feels uncomfortable in the name of trying to gain some sort of empathy and imagine what other kinds of experiences are from different kinds of music throughout the world. So the act of making that kind of music, I think, is what's showing me that we're moving into a very good place. And the discomfort is also showing me a good thing, too. It's like, make me a bird that's comfortable. So but it seems like we're sitting in a really good moment.
Yeah. I have to say, this is one of the upsides, that's the wrong way of saying it. One of the good things that came of the pandemic when orchestras couldn't function is we actually all sat down long enough to begin to learn what we had never been taught. Composers who aren't taught in our, conservatory training or university school of music training. These programs are changing. These curriculum are growing. There's been a real amount of time to sit and understand, oh, there's a reason why we haven't been seeing these composers and artists and perspectives and visionaries in our programming, because none of us knew that these musicians were here, that these composers were writing these pieces. And it's transformative to Brahms that we're playing Butterfly Lovers before it. And Lydie Boulanger, who's having her moment in the sun. And I'll tell you more about those folks in the concert itself. But Chase, my goodness, it's such a joy to have you here. I'm looking so forward. I wish we could just do Butterfly Lovers 3 times, even though I love Boulanger and Brahms. We'll have to do this again and find some full of glass, don't you think?
Yeah.
So thank you, Chase. Welcome to all of you, and we'll see you in just a few more minutes.